Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Man, what a gorgeous day it has been today. Hope everybody enjoying the fall weather. I mean, a little bit warmer than yesterday, but not terribly humid. Good day to be out and getting some things done, which I did.
There are lows in the next 10 days, Bill. There are some
60. They're all around 60 or
there
something.
There are some lows
did he hit the 50s?
In the 50s in the next 10 days or so. So be right. Still some highs in the mid-80s, too, in the next 10 days. But there are some.
But, I mean, it's not going to be back around 90. I got up. I had a doctor's appointment at 8 o'clock this morning, and it was cool feeling. It felt nice getting out, and it didn't feel great waking up early. But, I mean, it felt nice when I stepped outside.
Yeah, should just be a gorgeous, you know, we'll see about the storms swirling around the Gulf of Mexico again, but it should be a gorgeous next couple of days, and yeah, as you said,
yeah, enjoy the fall like weather. So we're pleased. I hope glad to have you with us here on the Tuesday. Oh, I forgot to turn the light on, Andy. Well, I wasn't sure if you were here or not.
Wasn't.
No, well, that's why I sent you a notice. I saw your car pulling up. The voice of the Auburn Tigers making his way here into the studio along with Bill and Dan.
Afternoon.
Andy Burcham. Andy, how are you doing on this beautiful day?
It's a gorgeous day, isn't it?
Traffic, really is.
Traffic reflects it
traffic
as well.
Traffic is...
It took 15 minutes to get here last week, 25 today.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't found the sweet spot.
I've got it. I'm not going to tell everybody the way I get here, but I mean, it works. I had an appointment just up the road here with our buddy Dr. Jim right here at 8 o'clock this morning. So I came my way of coming to work, and it worked because I avoided a couple of school districts. So
you have to
sort of know your routes, and
that's true.
And yeah, good luck to you.
I took the wrong one today.
Oh well. Well, I'm glad to have you here. Well,
thank you. Good to be here.
We've got a lot to talk about. I mean, Auburn about to head to the road for the month, as it's October now. Hard to believe it's already October, but Auburn will be on the road. We will talk about that. Look, you know, we got to get Andy's thoughts looking back. I also wanted to poll the room here, and we'll get some thoughts too. Yesterday, as yesterday, Pete Rose passing. At the age of 83, there've been a lot of notable sports figures. Dikembe Mutombo passing on Sunday at the age of 58 with brain cancer. But Pete Rose, no question, he has always been, since he made his debut with his hometown Cincinnati Reds, he's been a lightning rod. I mean, he was Charlie Hustle, but I mean, he was a guy that. You know, you either really, really liked him or you didn't. And I was in the latter.
Me too.
I was never a Pete Rose fan.
As a kid, I did not care for Pete Rose. And it had nothing to do with what kind of player he was. He played for the Reds.
And I didn't care
for the Reds.
No, you're a Cardinal guy.
Through the 70s, they were as good as it was.
They really were the big
in Major
Red
League Baseball
machine.
I will say this. I never met Pete Rose, okay?
I did.
I never had an opportunity to speak with him or interview him. There's obviously the great debate as to whether he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And I can see both sides of it, by the way. And before he passed away, the one play that kind of typifies Pete Rose, whether you like him or you don't care for him.
I know what it's got to be.
Was the All-Star game.
Absolutely.
And
Ray Fosse.
And running over Ray Fosse. Ray Fosse was from Marion, Illinois, which is near my hometown. As a matter of fact, I met Ray Fosse. The municipal baseball park in Marion, Illinois is named after Ray Fosse.
Wow, okay.
Yes. And I thought, had that been a regular season game or a postseason game, I understand running the man over. In this day and age, you can't do it. You're thrown out of the game.
No, you can't.
At that point, there was
nothing. It was very much,
But to do that in an All-Star game, and again, to do that in an All-Star game, and it basically ended Ray Fosse's career. Now,
I was about to ask if there were long-term, because I know parts of the story.
He was never the same player after that.
Ray Fosse was
part of those great Oakland A's teams.
He was almost the Johnny Bench of the American League.
He was a fabulous player.
He felt like he was going to be that kind of catcher.
It was an All-Star game. So
he was an All-Star. He was a power-hitting, outstanding defensive catcher.
Ray Fosse's credit, I never heard him say anything ill about Pete Rose as a result of that play.
You know, a lot of I got a chance to just to talk to Pete Rose. We carried his show when I was over in Montgomery, and we met him a couple of times. But talking to some other contemporaries of his, major leaguers that played, they didn't have a problem with it either because it was a big deal back then for your league to win the All-Star game.
There was money involved. The days of if you won the game, your league hosted in the World Series. It was a bigger deal. The All-Star game was a bigger deal.
There were big bragging rights as to, you know, who was the better league.
That was also a time when the National League was dominating in the All-Star game. Here's the thing. What year was that, Bill? Mid-70s?
I'm thinking it was earlier. I think it's 73 or 4.
I'm 12 years old at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 60-year-old Andy Burcham has no problem with it. 12-year-old Andy Burcham did.
Oh, I understand.
But listen, there's no way that you can deny what Pete Rose did as a player.
Absolutely.
And I mean, he's the greatest, one of the greatest hitters of all time.
Well, he is the all-time hits leader, and I don't think that record will ever be broken.
And at bats, and I mean, all of that. No, I doubt that it will, Bill. Not in this day and age. His troubles, at least publicly, began when he was managing. And when it was discovered, it came at a time when there was an image problem in Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, I don't know if it would be. I don't know if he would have been banned from the Hall of Fame in this age. Mm-hmm. Because of all the betting that's allowed now. I mean, there are odds. I was watching the first game. I was watching Detroit and Houston, and they're on the broadcast talking about the odds in the game.
I think something crucial to consider, and I say this as someone who, like Pete Rose, has been a controversial figure banned from baseball virtually my entire lifetime. Like, I don't remember his playing career. I don't remember his managerial career. All I know him as the, you know, the guy who this debate has swirled around. Even if you unbanned him from baseball, you would still have the hurdle of getting voters in the Major League Baseball who have been sensitive to other issues regarding game integrity. You would still have the hurdle of getting the percentage of votes into the Hall of Fame.
And if you allowed, and granted now it'll be posthumously, if it ever occurs for Pete Rose, if that is allowed, then are you then going to lift basically the ban on Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Rafael Palmeiro? Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Roger Clemens.
Clemens, yes. Andy Pettit. All those guys.
Gary Sheffield, maybe, ? Ramirez.
Those numbers are all there, all right? And I can understand both sides.
Did we say A-Rod? A-Rod's also on this list?
Yeah, of course. These are two really things.
It's very, yes, what they're accused of doing are two very different things. Mm-hmm. But in this day and age, if you allow one, are you not going to allow both?
That's a very good question. I have always, and look, I got a chance to meet Pete Rose. First of all, I wasn't a Pete Rose fan for sort of the same reason, because of the Big Red Machine and the fact that my roommate was the most obnoxious Cincinnati Reds fan ever. I mean, his dad had been a bat boy for the 39 Reds when Johnny Vandermeer threw back-to-back no-hitters, so I understand. He grew up loving the Reds.
Were they at Crosley Field at that point?
I guess so, in the 30s.
I would think so.
Tom was the most – and the Reds were great.
They were.
Pete Rose was one of those kind of guys.
He was a lightning rod.
He was you always bristled because he always looked like he was going to start something. But he did. He played hard, and dang it, he could hit. He was and I said we got a chance. I got a chance to meet him a couple of times. Not a very nice person.
Well, when
we met him,
I hate to speak of the dearly departed like this, but the way he responded to his ban of baseball, I think he could have handled it differently, that ban could have been diminished. I don't know, but he didn't help himself. Let me put it that way.
Oh no, no, and I thought if he had handled things better, that perhaps he could have been inducted into the Hall as a player, because there was never any a hint that he bet on baseball while he was playing. And as a player, he's a Hall of Famer. No question about that.
I agree.
I think he could be in the Hall of Fame, his plaque it could say, as a manager, he was found to have bet and was banned from baseball.
Perhaps.
You know. I thought so. Anyway, I'd like to get thoughts from our listeners as well
about whether or not Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. See, yeah. I think
as a player he should be.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I guess you could say if you wanted
because
to take
Shoeless Joe was accused of, even though he may not have been really involved, not understanding what he was doing. But Shoeless Joe Jackson was accused of, you know, being involved in gambling while he was playing
in the World Series. Right. And he was banned from baseball. Immediately.
Yes.
Never to play again.
Right.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
And during Pete Rose's life, at least publicly, you always got the sense that he was more upset. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, he was more upset about the ban keeping him from his managerial career than from the Hall of Fame. Like, I remember he made multiple statements thinking that he would have a chance to manage again if baseball lifted the ban,
I think he wanted to be a general manager or front office guy.
I think he wanted to be part of the game in some regard.
Sure, yes. And more so maybe even than being inducted into the Hall of Fame is something that bothered him was the fact that the ban kept him.
Yeah, because he knew, everywhere he went, he always had a thing, the all-time hits king. I mean, when we met, well, the first time Jim Fife and I got to meet him, just because he was around at something for his show on the network. I mean, in his hotel room, he'd have the all-time hits key that he would put up on the wall, so that, like, as if you didn't know. Yeah. I mean, he would take that everywhere he went.
But a ban from baseball probably should be different than a ban from putting someone on the Hall of Fame ballot
but I think it's one and the same
that feels to me like I don't know if you could make a distinction between those two things. You know, someone is not allowed to be part of Major League Baseball organization.
I have heard Hall of Famers that have defended Pete Rose, and I've heard Hall of Famers who are like, absolutely, he does not deserve to
be
in the Hall of Fame.
He broke the rules.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I've heard one of his former teammates say that. Johnny Bench, who I really like.
I don't think Johnny and Pete got along. I think a lot of people and Pete didn't get along.
I guess as a player, he was one of the all-time greats, whether you liked him or not.
That is right.
You cannot deny his numbers or the success of the teams that he played for.
And there's no reason to keep him from the Hall of Fame because he wasn't a nice person. There are plenty of folks who weren't nice folks that are in the Hall of
Fame. I understand taking a hard line against gambling.
Sure,
like, I understand taking the hard line. You do not want players betting. You do not want players providing insight.
Absolutely, you don't want managers.
You don't want players providing inside information to.
Even though he may have been betting on his team to win.
Right. But then, what happens on the days when he's not betting on his team to win? Like, does that, you know? There's questions. No. So I get not wanting that. Although it does feel like the difference. You know, the it does feel like the relationship between sports leagues and gambling enterprises has been like they've never been closer.
Oh, no kidding.
But yeah, still,
they feel like partners now.
But no, I guess I've always fallen on the side of the Hall of Fame is supposed to be a museum telling the story of the sport.
Right.
And I don't think you truly tell the story of the sport excluding Pete Rose. And I don't think you tell the story of the sport excluding great players who have been accused of performance-enhancing drug use.
You need to know about all the eras. I mean, you had the dead ball era. You had the, you know, so you had the steroid era. It's like, well, here were the greatest players during the steroid era.
And you listed some, Andy, and I wouldn't disagree. Like, every single one of those guys from, you know, belongs in, and right. I would probably lump in on that. Like, I think, yeah, all of
here
it feels incomplete.
Here's a gripe I've got about my team, okay? Because the Cardinals reaped the reward of Mark McGwire during the year that he and Sammy Sosa had the home run competition throughout that whole year. And, of course, at the end of the year is when all of that started to break. And then the Cardinals, as I understand it, had a statue already built of Mark McGwire, ready, and they have statues all over the place at Busch Stadium of the all-time greats. Mm-hmm. They're great. They're terrific. They do a great job with this. And then the Cardinals decided that they were not going to honor Mark McGwire for a while. And my thought was, well, if that's the case, then you need to return all the money that you guys reaped from that season of a sellout crowd of a team that really wasn't all that good other than Mark
People
McGwire.
People coming to see Mark McGwire.
Who was the leadoff batter for the last half of that season to break the record. Mm-hmm. You didn't seem to mind taking that money in and reaping all the rewards of that, and now you're going to be a little sanctimonious? Now, I will say this. The Cardinals have mended their ways. There is a McGwire statue. He is now in the Cardinals Hall of Fame.
That's good because
I'm glad they've done that.
They look like they're pinching pennies now.
Well, that's a whole other subject. And don't get me started.
I know. All right, so we'll talk other things, but just thought, you know, with the playoffs underway today, by the way, the Tigers behind Tarek Skubal look like they're about to win game one there in Houston. Three-zip with the Astros batting in the bottom of the ninth.
Do we have a Braves starter for tonight? Do we have have they announced a plan for what they're going to do?
We know Chris Sale will not pitch this weekend or this series. He is not on the roster for the series.
Smith Shauver is what ESPN.com says.
It is Smith Shauver and Michael King going for the Padres as they're holding Dylan Cease back for a couple of days. But Michael King has really been good down the stretch.
Smith Shauver started one game for the Atlanta Braves this season.
And was really good in that one start.
Pitched pretty well in that game. Top pitching prospect in the organization.
The Braves' number one prospect heading into the season. We got one other game going on right now. And Kansas City and Baltimore are scoreless in the fifth. All right, we're just underway. Bill, Dan, Andy Burcham, Drew at the controls. We'll get to our first break and to the phones. Yellowhammer, hang on. You'll be up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star backyard is the...
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 23 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. And let's get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar and Yellowhammer. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. Two things. Pete Rose betting on the games. You bet against your team, that's horrible. Bet on your team, that incentivizes you to play as well as you possibly can.
Well, so that's what he said.
Just wondering, was there ever any definitive evidence one way or the other?
All the evidence that was uncovered was that he bet on his team to win.
Okay.
But it's still against baseball rules.
And if you're betting on your team to win a regular season baseball game, are you doing things that may imperil your team down the line? Are you using pitchers that you otherwise wouldn't use because this game has extra importance? Are you sending a message to your bookie when you don't bet on your team to win, if you're betting on your team to win certain games? I think there's ample reason why a player shouldn't be betting for or against his team if you want to protect the integrity of professional sport.
Well, I'll buy that, but then let's go on to the 80s, I think it was. There was all sorts of illegal performance enhancing stuff that a lot of the batters were, I guess, using. And so
pitchers, too.
Did they get banned?
None of those guys, which includes Clemens and Sosa and McGuire and Palmeiro and A-Rod, they all have the numbers to be in the hall, but none are in.
But they weren't. They weren't.
They were not banned,
they were not
from,
banned
baseball.
From baseball.
Though, I don't know if any of them played after that, though, either.
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of who did after it was either proven or admitted by them.
Okay, well, that's about all I was wondering. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. All right.
So Pete Rose was banned in 1989 by then-Commissioner Bart Giamatti, who passed away a week later after announcing the ban. Father of actor Paul Giamatti.
That is right.
Pete Rose, I think the timeline would be for 13 years after the ban, Pete Rose steadfastly denied any involvement. And then, which I think also some folks found distasteful, he confessed it in a book that he wrote and released in 2002, My Prison Without Bars. In the book, he acknowledged that he confessed to Bud Selig that he bet regularly on baseball, including on games played by the Reds when he was the manager, though he never bet against the Reds. He did bet on the Reds, but never against them was his official confession to Bud Selig.
Yeah, so we'd love your thoughts as we continue here. While we've got Andy here, though, we obviously are going to jump into football now. And, man, we've talked about some tough losses, none tougher. Last week was probably as bitter a pill to swallow as
It goes back to the Iron Bowl last year. That's the one that I compare it to, the feeling after that game. That was a gut punch, the way that game ended, and as close as Auburn was to winning a game and really playing well to win a game.
Oh, I mean, playing better, being the better team on the field, you felt all the way until the pick six.
Yes.
I mean, they were still the better team, but they were trailing.
The air went out of the place on the pick six. And that, you know what? It's too bad because of the way the game ended. It's also too bad for Peyton Thorne because until that point, it may have been the best game that Peyton Thorne had played in an Auburn uniform.
I think it was.
I think the air went out of the place on the 60-yard pass by Oklahoma. I think that's where you really the fans started to feel like, oh, this is trending in the wrong direction,
well,
and
I
the
agree,
pressure started.
But
you're right. The culmination of that
when Oklahoma took the lead.
Oh, certainly.
Oh, my goodness.
You're absolutely right. But I mean, we've been discussing more. I mean, there are plays in the fourth quarter,
21-10 with the ball in the fourth quarter.
I mean,
that's where you felt like this one is about to be done.
And the McLeod sack feels like one of those plays
agreed. I agree with all of that, and it should have been drive, take time off the clock, win the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple things, and Coach Freeze has talked. He talked about it in his presser yesterday. He talked about it again last night on Tiger Talk. They have to do it again. There are some plays from an offensive standpoint to do it again. They've done it different. One would be Jarquez getting the ball on fourth and one in the first half, and two,
Jarquez would have gotten the ball more in the fourth quarter.
That's right.
I mean, goodness, 17 carries for 97 yards against an Oklahoma team that had been almost impenetrable as far as running the ball against.
Agreed.
An interesting fact about Auburn's run game, because Coach Freeze mentioned in the press conference correctly on Monday morning that Auburn is fifth in the SEC in yards per attempt on running the football. Auburn is averaging 5.5. Yards per attempt on the ground this year. They have 856 yards on 157 rushing attempts. There are four teams ranked ahead of Auburn in yards per attempt in the SEC. Tennessee, Ole Miss, Alabama, and Texas A&M. Those are also the top four teams in total rushing yards.
And Auburn is number nine in that category.
In the SEC, right. And Auburn is ninth in that category.
That's the big difference.
Auburn has attempted fewer rushes. I mean, when you look at the fact that Jarquez is averaging 13 rushes per game, that is surprising. You would think, well, then I guess Damari Alston must be averaging 10, and
he's got 25 carries.
No, I mean, that's right. That's the surprising thing, right, is that Auburn hasn't run anymore. Although, the other numbers, I mean, Auburn is picking up yards passing. Auburn is moving the ball. It's just they have stopped themselves too many times.
You know, I felt bad for Saturday in addition to Peyton Thorne? Luke Deal.
Oh, yeah.
Luke Deal makes one of the finest catches that anybody has made this year for Auburn. And this is a guy that is, what, in his sixth year at Auburn, has stuck around.
It's like his third catch.
Yeah. It's his second ever touchdown catch. Uh-huh. And it should have been a crowning moment for Luke, who's married with a child and is doing all the things that you want from an Auburn player perspective. And it was a great, great catch.
With a guy all over him, yes, that was going to be, if he didn't make the catch,
right,
it's interference.
On a well-designed, well-designed play. That really should have been it.
Yep.
That should have been it for Auburn in that ball game.
Should have. That's really of September is, yeah, should have.
I would add.
We're in October now.
Yeah.
I would add Lambert Smith.
It's not Otta.
Oh, Keandre Lambert Smith.
To the list of guys. I mean,
he's
having one of the better five game stretches an Auburn receiver has had in recent memory to begin his tenure. And unfortunate that it hasn't been able to translate. I mean, it's through no fault of number five that this thing hasn't been able to translate to more wins on the field, seemingly, because he's been as advertised and more, I think, as a top receiving option.
I think one of the frustrating things, and I think it's frustrating for this team. I know it's frustrating. I know it is. It's frustrating for the fan. How the margin of error for this team is so very slim right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like you go out and you have 14 penalties in a game and you lose. And even though Auburn had those 10 turnovers in its two previous losses, you still had chances to win both of those games. This past week, you cut down on third downs by the opponent. You cut down on your turnovers. Now, the one turnover was a big one. But the margin of error is so slim for this team right now to be either 3-2, 4-1, or even 5-0 at this point.
It doesn't feel like it should be that slim. I mean,
well, it is.
The thing is, if you just convert, you get some points when you had chances in the first and second quarters. Auburn should have been up 24-7.
Yes, it should have.
And if you do that, then you've got a much bigger margin of error, and you're probably not throwing.
Yeah, pick six at that point doesn't matter.
Yeah, the thing is, probably not even throwing there then if you're up 17 or more.
But I guess the shoe's on the other foot, because we were saying Cal probably left points on the board the first half of that football game. And, I mean,
and they were able to win.
And they were able to hold off an Auburn rally there in the second half. I mean, that's one of the. I mean, the fact that Auburn, I guess you could say it was another slow start because you left points on the board. But at the same time, we came away thinking Auburn was playing pretty good football by the end of the first half.
Oh yeah,
you know,
Auburn had almost 280 yards total offense at the half, and 14 points
against the defense that most believe was the best that Auburn
had faced
this season.
Not giving up 300 yards a game.
Right.
Auburn had almost as many yards in the first half.
Yeah.
So I got to somehow put that behind them as they head to Athens, where the Tigers haven't won in nearly two decades.
Well, it's the Brandon Cox fourth down pass and the field goal to win it.
Right.
Isn't that the last Auburn win there?
2005.
Yeah.
Blackouts 2 years later.
Yeah. I think so.
That's correct. Yeah. 2007 is the blackout, and then from that point on, it's been the blackout. The blackout started a streak that has yet to be snapped.
Yes.
All right, we'll look at that and more. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you get your podcasts.
Come on in and join us as we continue here with the Tuesday Drive.
ESPN 1067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, with us here for hour number one. Let's get to the Drive Hotline. And JC is up next. Hey, JC. JC, you with us?
KC?
Yeah.
Oh, Casey, sorry.
Oh, Casey, sorry about that.
Somebody's fine.
Yeah, Drew was a letter off on your name. Sorry about that.
It's all right. It's all right. Close is good enough. Just want to talk about the game. I'm sure everybody else is kind of putting in their two cents. I like the game plan for most of the part. I didn't like them subbing in everybody on the, the Sam Jackson plays. I think there should have been motion going on. I did see where the line absolutely missed the blocks there. Somebody jumped through and kind of cut through to get to him. But I think motion would have helped out, freeze the backer, at least the mic, for just a minute. I would rather have Jarquez Hunter running that play, to be honest with you, and have somebody on the sweep like Sam Jackson. But especially if we're just going to run it straight ahead. Wasn't really wild about it. I think it would have been, great if we did like quarterback power, something like that. But just running to the side and then trying to leap through the box, that didn't look good. I thought everything was game planned really good. I always like to see Simmons in motion. I love that because it always kind of has to hold those linebackers up, especially if it's an RPO. I think we got to have constant motion from somewhere on the run. I would love to see like a RPO down there on the goal line once. Towns Magoo, he had a bad game. There's just nothing really to comment other than that. It's kind of weird. The only other real comment I got is it just flabbergasts me because we're down there milking the clock is what we're trying to do. Jarquez had a whale of a game against a very good run defense statistically this year on paper, and we go empty with Peyton, who he's got kind of shaky confidence, and you had third down and four. I just do not see why if you're going to go empty, you don't just go drop back and run forward. Or if it would have been me, I would have loaded up with a bunch of big blocking guys. I know that our tight ends are kind of getting slim, like as far as the depth. But I just do not see why you just do not snap that ball, go straight ahead. If you don't make it, go for it again. You probably got less yards to make on the next down, on the fourth down. I think, of course, the other things that really killed us was Coleman not checking back because we missed the touchdown on that play when he moved from the fly route and moved inside for some reason.
There's a long pass with some miscommunication between Thorne and the receiver, right? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, that was a touchdown, I think, because the ball was thrown on time, and he just moved inside for some reason. Like, I don't know why.
Yeah, I remember.
It was down the Auburn sideline.
Peyton was not happy about that.
Third quarter, maybe?
Yes. No, it was fourth quarter.
Was it?
That was the first pass on first down after Jarquez's run.
Okay. Yeah, I remember the play. I'm just trying to remember what it was.
Yeah, I remember Cam. Cam went inside.
And he was open.
Peyton threw the ball outside. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I think that would have been a touchdown. I really do. And if we had one of those two missed field goals, I don't think we'd all be gnashing our teeth today. I'm not on the fire Hugh Freeze bandwagon. Look, everybody that's football fans have got to know that when Harsin left, we had a plastic cup from a restaurant in the cupboard, okay? That's what we had left. We didn't have a really good talent-rich roster, and you have to give Hugh time. Yes, there's been some real boneheaded play calls. He's absolutely squandered an opportunity to start out better with the home field game. And he's just now getting to plays where I think we need to be. But I just think people need to be patient. They need to, you know, I think he needs at least three years, maybe four. Now, if he starts not doing what he's been doing and we lose a foothold in recruiting, I will be very concerned. If we can't, we have to get the best transfer back, quarterback, whether we pick up Deuce Knight or not in the offseason. It doesn't matter.
Or any high school quarterback. I agree. I think the goal will be good a high school quarterback and as good a transfer quarterback as you can get.
That's right, because if not, you're putting your neck on the line, literally, and on the rest of those coaches. And I've been very satisfied with the defense, especially looking at the youth they have.
Yeah, that's one of the more exciting things, Casey, is that having a bunch of guys, and again, you don't know who's it's dangerous to project in college football who's going to be back next year and who isn't, but it feels like if you just go by who has eligibility remaining on this Auburn defense, Bill, like there are multiple players to be excited about that you've seen more of in the last game or two. Riddick is one of the stories of the Auburn defense from Saturday, the decision to unleash one of the exciting freshmen
no
from this class.
No question about it, Andy. I mean, he was all over the field, DeMarcus Riddick. I mean,
maybe not lined up in the right spot or doing what he was supposed
to
be doing.
Plays.
But he had eight tackles and a sack.
Yeah.
So, and listen, I mean, we knew that. I mean, the word on him was he was going to be a dynamic linebacker for Auburn. And maybe it just took four games for it to click. I don't know. I hope we see this the rest of the year.
It clicked Saturday. You know, I'm looking forward to
it. Between, I mean, just looking at guys with eligibility remaining, and I know there's probably some COVID senior, you know, numbers you could do here, but I mean, thinking about Malik and Jameson Travis and Kieron Crawford.
Is it Quintrell or Bobby, by the way? I've heard both. I need to ask the young man what he would prefer.
That's a great idea, Andy, because I've heard players call him Bobby.
I have too.
And
I will break the tie
on
here.
The roster, he's still listed Quintrell.
Right. Now, if Jason Caldwell calls him Bobby, it's good enough for me.
Jason usually knows.
It's good enough for me, but that's
it does roll a little bit easier off the tongue.
With Bobby and with Malik on the defensive line, Keldrick Falk, obviously, Kieron Crawford, Amaris Williams, you saw more DeMarcus Riddick, and then the whole secondary.
Yeah.
I mean, how many?
Other than
Keontae. How about Jay Crawford playing
every snap.
Every snap of the game as the other corner opposite.
Apparently Kane today, Antonio Kite in a green jersey today.
All right.
You know, after not playing at all on Saturday. Well, so.
And we just saw some reports that
Alex McPherson,
Jalen McLeod was in a non-contact jersey today at Auburn practice too. Ooh. No word on that. Would be a new development.
Hopefully, that's just precautionary. The other thing I saw was that Alex McPherson was kicking long field goals and making them today.
Well, so Coach Freeze was asked about that last night on Tiger Talk. One of the folks there, and we had a huge crowd last night at Baumhauer's. I was pleased at how, and this was, you know, typically in the past we have not had shows at Baumhauer's before road games, but that was Thursdays with Mondays.
This one is so close,
exactly.
You're still looking back at the ball game.
It was a great crowd, and he was asked about Alex on the show last night, and he said, to that point, till Monday, all right, his distance had not returned from the summer of the intestinal problems and the spring of the hamstring.
I watched him in the pregame Saturday, and he was making them from 40, but there wasn't much to spare.
Right. Which is odd, which is less than him
the ball
in the past.
Generally
so
just really comes off.
Obviously, it's something we'll keep an eye on with regard to
Alex. But good to
hear
that he was kicking 45-plus
today.
Sure,
absolutely.
Appreciate the call from Casey. Casey, and I'll tell you what, let's get to our final break so we've got time. John, you'll be up first when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Get out of joint or
live at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final segment of hour number one, our final few minutes with the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Let's get back to the phone, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey guys. Couple quick points, but first, just as a kind of throw off here, I'm really impressed with at Jordan Hare. I think it's in the free kickoff video. One of the voices you hear at Jordan Hare is Phil Snow, and I think Phil Snow is somebody that, you know, somebody that's under 30, 35 years old doesn't know that name. Mm-hmm. But I just felt like he did more for the advancement of Auburn media than a lot of people, and just one of those names that not a lot of people know today.
Well, he was the longtime host of the Auburn Football Review with Coach Dye when they did it in Montgomery. And, of course, he at the time, he was the lead anchor on sports in Montgomery for a number of years. He was doing it when I came to town and did it for a number of years after that. And he was, he was just he was a classic TV man, and mm-hmm. he was really close as well with the Auburn. He was an honorary member of the Auburn Football Letterman's Club. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yes, he sure was.
Wow. That's really interesting. What I called about is, you know, I went back. A lot of people are frustrated with the performance of the football team this year. I went back and looked. In Bruce Pearl's first 2 years at Auburn, he had a 9-27 conference record at a 250 clip. And I think SEC football now is stronger than SEC basketball was then. And it shows me that this is a program that probably needs fundamental change. And I hate to say it, but change takes time. And I feel personally, I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on this. I think one of the most important games of Freeze's era at Auburn will probably be the Baylor game next year in the opener.
Yeah, you're not going to ease into the season next year like you were able to this year. He has said from day one, John Cohen has said from day one, it's going to take time to rebuild this program. And the plan has been all along to rebuild it with the high school student athletes. Now, they couldn't do that in year one. They had to get players in to fill out the roster in year one, and they started with this 24 class. Of course, everything indicates right now that the 25 class is going to be even better. Yes, you've got to get to December. You've got to get those kids signed, and the same thing about 26. But they've all maintained, and Coach Freeze has said this from day one, to build this program back and to build this program back to where it is contending, we're going to do it through the high school ranks. That doesn't mean you're not going to go to the Juke or to the portal, because they are. I don't think anybody is not going to the portal ever again. I think that's always going to be a part of it. But I think they want to build this back. It's going to take some time. It requires a little bit of patience. Doesn't take the sting away from Saturday's loss anymore. Doesn't help.
Pearl comparison's interesting, because Bruce finished 13th in the conference his first year at Auburn, 13th in the conference his second year at Auburn, 11th in the conference his third year at Auburn. Some of those wins have been vacated. And then in year four, Auburn makes the title run and shares the conference championship with Tennessee. Now, Auburn basketball,
was the absolute pits of the Southeastern Conference.
Yes, it was. I would contend that the basketball program when Bruce Pearl came in was even a step lower as far as talent is concerned.
No question.
Than when Hugh Freeze came in. But I think there are great similarities between the two.
Thank you guys. Really appreciate it. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, John.
Thank you, John.
Marcus, we got a couple of minutes. Hey, Marcus.
Hey guys. Look, I agree. You have to build it through the high school ranks. You're building great relationships. But I think if we're all honest, including you, Auburn, particularly after Saturday, because I thought we outplayed Oklahoma.
You got to win some of these.
we should be 5-0 at this point, because I think our talent is at least as good as Arkansas, if not better. Mm-hmm. I think it's better than California, and the way we played Saturday, we certainly deserve to win that game. And some of it, I think, is on coaching decisions. And, of course, the turnovers have killed us in the other two games, but very realistically, even though the talent level is not where it is like with Georgia and Alabama, I think most Auburn people, including Hugh, should say we should be 5-0 at this point.
Oh, he said that.
No, he said it last night on Tiger Talk.
He got crushed for – I mean, look, I maintain what he said about the Arkansas game was a diplomatic way of saying it was a fluke. When you say that you should have won 9 of 10 against a team that just beat you, that's another way of saying that's a game we really – and again, Hugh Freeze would not – he didn't say it that way, but I think it's clear how he feels about the losses to Cal, Arkansas, and I think it's fair for everyone to feel that way about Oklahoma.
I believe
here's what's fair as a coach. I think if I have better talent than you, I should win the game. Don't you guys agree with me on that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what's been frustrating about this year.
Oh, yeah,
I don't think anybody expected him to go to the playoffs or beat Alabama or beat Georgia, but we should have beat 5-0 at this.
And there were even games, appreciate the phone call, there were even games people would point to towards the end of last season where maybe Auburn had a talent advantage on paper and could not.
It's not going to be the case this week. We'll worry about the rest of October, but Andy, quite the challenge for the Tigers.
Yeah. 11:30 is our pregame show on Saturday. 2:45, we're told, is kickoff from Sanford Stadium in Athens. Rob Taylor on a podcast this week, U.S. Men's Olympic Paralympic head basketball coach who heads up the Auburn wheelchair program as well. That's on the podcast this week. Gene Chizik on Monday to talk about the 04 undefeated team.
That's great. Andy, have a great trip. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you very much. I'll be back with you next week.
At Reynolds and Network Production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well here on this nice-looking day. Our thanks to the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, who has spent hour number one with us here in the studio. Hope you got a chance to hear Andy. If you missed any of that, definitely check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive, available however you get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center, or go to any podcasting platform, Apple, Spotify, and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. You can find us that way as well. Rate, review, subscribe. It helps us on the algorithms. I don't understand how all that works, but my understanding is that it helps if you rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And that's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Big shout out to our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And we'd love for you to join in. You can give us a call on The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can text us 334-564-1840 on The Drive text box. That presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Let's get to the Drive hotline, and Brett is up first this hour. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. When everybody says that Auburn's losing these games, we've got more talent, you know, you do have to take into account talent at quarterback. That's a huge piece of the puzzle. And part of that talent is decision-making, which I would say Auburn lacks. On a scale of 1 to 10, Auburn's about a 3.
No, I would say, I mean, you know, I can't quibble too much with the number, but you know what I mean? Like, it's too often when you're talking about when you're talking about games that when you're talking about games slipping away, you know, it's if it's a one-off occurrence, you know, you might not seriously reconsider anything you went through. But when it's happening over and over again, it does start to feel like it's a built-in aspect of this, which is troubling.
Peyton Thorne did not lose the ball game Saturday, Brett.
I would say he didn't lose it, but boy, he played a huge part of it. And I'm not saying just because he threw the pick six.
I was referring more to Hugh Freeze and sort of Auburn, but I mean Peyton Thorne's been out there too for a lot of these fourth quarters. To be fair, but
you know, we were talking yesterday about
six-year quarterback that does not make the two passes he made. Hmm. And then throw a pick six. I mean,
why are you call? I mean, my question is, why are you even calling passes? Why? I mean, when you are up 21-10, and you have the ability to communicate with your quarterback, why are you even putting them in the situation where that is what they see and have been coached to do? Just say, run the ball, call a running play. And then you can check the run to one side or the other, but run the ball so you can run the clock and win the game.
I feel like if we had Cal's quarterback, Menendez, not even a highly recruited player, I would bet, and I'm not a bettor, I would bet Auburn would be 5-0. Just make
well, maybe
throw,
so, maybe so. But if you put any quarterback out there and give them that run-pass option, and Oklahoma shows you they've got this many people in the box, and you keep throwing it, you still run up a high risk of there being an incompletion, which stops the clock, or a ball picked.
Well, no, but I want to jump here and sort of wonder, because I don't know the answer to this, Brad, but it's like at times when Auburn needed to be more conservative, I'd say especially against Oklahoma, but you can look at other situations Auburn has been in, like how much of that is the play caller and how much of that's the quarterback doing, you know, making the decision in that moment. Because I would agree that Peyton Thorne had Peyton Thorne's worst series of the game is you know ends with the pick six. But as Bill said, Auburn probably should have iced the game long before that by leaning on its running backs and taking the ball out of Thorne's hands and taking the fight to Oklahoma that way.
Yeah, well, here's another thing. When we talk about talent, that they might have good speed, all that, but our secondary, I mean, yeah, Crawford's a freshman. He looked like he played, even though they didn't throw at him. But our secondary is not good at all. I mean, I hate to say it because I thought he was going to have a big season, but Kay and Lee, he's not toast. He's burnt toast, man. I'm not talking about just one time. He's been burnt many a time.
Oklahoma is probably the least impressive passing offense Auburn sees in conference. They're in the mix, I would say, with the new. We'll see what the new quarterback looks like the rest of the way. But Auburn faces several teams that are a tier or two better.
Including
Saturday. Yeah. Like Auburn's facing teams that are much better passing offenses than Oklahoma, and that's got to be a concern based on the way the secondary has played so far this year.
Well, yeah, decision making huge, but Auburn still. They're a long way. I mean, you know, I know when Hugh Freeze says we're close. Yeah, we're close to beating teams that aren't real good, but Auburn's not close in talent. I mean, as far as where they need to.
Oh, they're not close to be able to compete for the SEC by any means. But you've got to win some of these games that appear winnable.
I'm not sure.
That's something that has been a problem. Like I mentioned yesterday, Stat Tiger pointing out there on Auburn Undercover's site that over the last 5 years, Hugh Freeze has won 33% of his games that have been decided by 7 points or less. But maybe that's a credit for being that close, but you got to win a better percentage of those one-score
games.
Well,
Bill, tell me what you think. Tell me how many you think Auburn's going to win
this year. Now, I have a tough time getting to 500 right now.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'd say 4-5.
But I mean, I think I felt like Auburn should be at least 4-1 coming out of the first five. Looking back at these games, I still think Auburn should have been 4-1 coming out of the first five.
Auburn lacks the talent to get where they want to go if you're talking about contending for the SEC championship. I don't think a lack of talent was the issue in any of Auburn's three losses as far as why they ultimately lost. I think there were I mean Auburn had the I think
Auburn's Auburn, beaten themselves.
Yeah, I think Auburn has a team right now that is good enough to, especially at home, beat Cal or Arkansas or Oklahoma. And the fact that they didn't is troubling, and a lot of it can be laid at the feet of the head coach.
Yeah, but Auburn's talent for the most part is young talent.
Oh yes, they need to add more, no question.
I mean, Arkansas went out and got he's not a great quarterback, but he helps them win. They went out and got a quarterback. We just sat there, but anyway, y'all have a great day.
All right. Well, Auburn went out and got a quarterback last year that they thought would be better this year. But, and Saturday, I thought he had a pretty good game.
Oh no, but to me, the argument that Hugh Freeze should have brought an outsider at the quarterback position in this past offseason, to me, that's more valid than thinking someone other than Peyton should be playing of the guys right now.
Oh yeah,
If you're upset that Hugh Freeze went into a season where his top two options at quarterback are Peyton Thorne and Hank Brown, that's totally fair. If you think someone other than Peyton of the guys they have available, if you like, I said it yesterday. At no point Saturday did I think Auburn would improve their chances of victory by switching from Peyton to Hank. At no point Saturday did I think Auburn would have a better shot of beating Oklahoma if they made the switch from Hank Brown to Peyton, from Peyton Thorne to Hank Brown. Now that's different than saying, Hugh Freeze made the correct call betting big on Peyton Thorne this offseason. But I think that if you're trying to win games right now, the guy who gives you the best chance on the team is probably Thorne.
All right, let's update you on playoff baseball, which is going on right now. The Tigers hang on and beat the Astros 3-1. Astros had the tying runs in scoring position with one out in the bottom of the ninth, but they could not get them across. So Detroit takes a 1-0 lead in that best of three. Top nine, Kansas City is hanging on to a 1-0 lead in Baltimore with the Royals batting in the top of the ninth. And in the National League, the first game in the National League, it's a different story here. The Mets are leading the Brewers 3-2 with the Brewers batting in the bottom of the second. Of course, the final game today will be the Braves at San Diego. And as Andrew Smith-Shawver going to be starting for the Braves against Michael King for the Padres in a ball game you can hear right here on ESPN 106.7 coming up tonight at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, Severino versus Peralta in the Mets-Brewers game one. An RBI triple from Jesse Winker scoring a couple of runs for the Mets to get them on the board. An sack fly from Marte that scored Winker. So the Mets with an early 3-2 lead. I think that could be a fun series, Brewers-Mets. The Mets playing really well after a slow start this season, and the Brewers just quietly, the best team in the Central, pretty much the bell to bell.
All right. Jeremy is up next as we continue here with the Tuesday Drive. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, guys. That's a scrappy Tigers team.
Yeah, you're right. Man, they have been as good as anybody down the stretch.
Yeah, the Tigers.
They were left. I mean, everybody said they're out of it when they traded Jack Flaherty, and they appeared to be out of it. And, man, they really came on down the stretch.
The Tigers and the Mets are the two playoff teams that were left for dead at different points this year. The Mets, after a really bad first 2 months, where I think they were 10 games under 500, 60, 70 games into the season, and the Tigers playing the way they have in the last couple of months.
You talk about like a young baseball team. That Tigers bunch is young. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they've got anybody that seems to be over 30 years old. And even like I've kind of hated it for Casey Mize because he's had some bad luck with some injuries, and I just don't know that his stuff is his sinker just has not translated the way that it needed to. But he actually got off to a good start this year and just wasn't able to keep it up. Right. I like watching that Tigers bunch play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After the first couple of games, I was okay with people being upset with some of the players and the turnovers and some of that stuff.
I'm not hearing it about Saturday. Mm. That was not the problem Saturday.
Mm. No.
It was a big play late in the game that never should have been an option. I sit around a bunch of 60-year-old women that couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. They've seen enough football over the years that they know better than what was going on. One of them got a laugh out of about the four rows out of our section because she screamed after the drive where we missed the 51-yard field goal. They get the ball and hit the bomb. But what led up to that there, with 11 minutes to go in the game,
the two incompletions,
throwing the ball incomplete and all this other kind of stuff. I don't know if y'all remember, when we got the ball back after they scored, the first play was a tall sweep to Jarquez. The lady two rows in front of me just stands up and yells, "That's what you should have done on the last drive." And like I said, this is a 60-year-old lady hanging around that's seen enough football that she knows. And that's the kind of thing that drives me nuts. The stuff that the 60-year-old women know with 100% certainty you should be doing, and you don't seem to know that.
I absolutely agree, and I would say I know who you were talking about, but I don't think there was anybody sitting behind
We've wondered before, Jeremy. I mean, because it's been a feature of the Hugh Freeze offense that he throws it more than he gives it to his running backs, and we've wondered if that's something that especially.
What was that?
What? It's what he wants to do instead of what he needs to do.
Yeah, I mean. And we've seen other offensive coordinators who can't shake that in their careers, and it follows them to different programs and different coaches. You know, have their issues. We've seen other coaches who grow out of it. You know, and lean on the run game more as they age. But
yeah, it makes me wonder at times if the feeling is we can blow this team out instead of just. Just winning this ball game. Let's go ahead. And I'm all for if you have an opportunity to go ahead and put a team away. But Auburn had opportunities earlier that they didn't take advantage of to completely put them away.
Well, sure. And part of those opportunities, what was the biggest problem in the way that those didn't come up?
Yeah, getting too cute or too fancy with some plays down around the goal line in the first quarter and then clock management in the second quarter.
Jeremy, I mentioned the numbers in the first half, and we had Andy Burcham in. Auburn is fifth in the SEC in yards per attempt on the ground. They average 5.5 yards a carry this season. The four teams ranked ahead of Auburn in that stat, Tennessee, Ole Miss, Alabama, and Texas A&M, are the top four teams in the league in rushing yards per game. Auburn is ninth in rushing yards per game, despite being fifth in the conference in yards per carry.
What's the best high school recruit that Hugh Freeze got to play quarterback for him?
Shea Patterson?
Shea Patterson, but I don't know how much Shea actually got to play for Hugh Freeze.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm talking about. We're talking about he needs to go get a high school quarterback and really bring him up. And that's who's the one that he's – the best quarterback he's ever coached was Malik Willis, but he transferred in.
Yeah, well,
Bo Wallace,
yeah.
What's the best quarterback that guy ever brought in out of high school and turned into somebody good?
I mean, I guess the good news would be, Jeremy, even if you can't really refute that, the good news would be getting a quarterback out of high school and turning him into a winner is a smaller part of college football than ever before when you look at how many programs are leaning on portal quarterbacks, but at the same time, you'd like that to be a skill your head coach possesses. Chad Kelly was a junior college quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because Chad Kelly had a couple good seasons.
How many top level quarterbacks are there out there transferring around? Though, guys, there's a reason they're transferring around. like, who's the transfer quarterback out of the portal this year that's gone somewhere and we're saying, oh, look at what this guy's doing?
Cam Ward at Miami would be the answer to that. Will Howard at Ohio State.
So two. There's not a lot of those guys.
No, they're not.
Everybody makes it sound like the portal is just the salvation to your football problems. It is not.
No, it can be a big help, but you better not count on it. No.
You've got to be able to recognize the talent coming out of high school, and you've got to be able to develop that talent. Those are the two things that you've got to do. And if you can't do those things, I don't care how good of a recruiting class you bring in, if you're not making the players better after they get to you, you're going to end up with a bunch of high school players by their junior years.
No, great. I mean, you're absolutely great stuff, Jeremy. Appreciate the phone call. I would say it's probably because we forgot about Dylan Gabriel at Oregon too. So you're probably looking at probably 40% of the top 10 right now is guys who are first year transfers. If you dig a little bit deeper than that, right, you get into Riley Leonard at Notre Dame. You get into the Louisville quarterback, Shug. I mean, so there are a couple other guys but he's right. I mean, it's not, you want that to be a skill your head coach possesses. You want to have a track record of, especially if offense is your calling card,
right?
And quarterback play is you know, in passing offense your calling card. You want a coach who has demonstrated the ability to do that. And to this point, while Hugh Freeze has had successful passing offenses at Ole Miss and at Liberty, absolutely, you could point to. It's not a long list of quarterbacks who signed with Hugh Freeze out of high school and then turned into impact players in college football at that position.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in here on the Tuesday Drive.
At Reynolds.
Dan Drew at the controls, and Tex is up next on the Drive Hotline. Hey, Tex.
Hey, Tex.
Hey, well, I'm sure happy Cindy wasn't riding with me when Jeremy just dropped the 60-year-old women know football.
I know a lot of women in their prime who understand football pretty darn well.
Well, Bill, if Kathy and Cindy were sitting with him, they would he would get an awakening. it just kind of, I'm just glad I wasn't with her, because then I'd have to hear it because Jeremy said that. It has nothing to do with me. A couple things. I don't really want to talk about the football game. It makes my head want to explode. So that's number one. Number two, if Ray Lewis can be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson can be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Because he got awarded that not because he's a great citizen, but because he was a great football player. And those two gentlemen, Shoeless Joe and Pete Rose, were both great baseball players, and that's why they should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
And they are.
And I'll never come.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say.
I'll never come off that statement.
I've always thought it was very strange how baseball players are judged to a different standard than players in the basketball or football Hall of Fames when it comes to things like that, Tex. Mm-hmm. Do you have a stance? I feel like I've probably asked you this before, because we were talking about it with Andy Burchman, hour number one. Do you have a stance on players who are not who are being excluded from the Hall of Fame because they are suspected of using performance enhancing drugs?
That'd be saying, Dan, I think you shouldn't be on the radio because I suspect that you're biased toward Alabama. That's the dumbest damn thing in the world. If you suspect that they did it, you better have proof. We don't live in the land where if you're suspected, you get put in jail. You have to have proof. Look, no. Will Clark has been chastised isn't the right word, has been put off, and now is off the record ballot for one reason only. He played at the same time, and he played and is known close with Rafael Palomero. So unless you have proof, it's stupid. It's a baseball Hall of Fame. It's what you did on the baseball field. I don't get it. I just can't.
I'm in total agreement. total agreement. I hate to see the Hall of Fame exclude so many great players.
And you know, we opened the show talking about it with Andy, who's a big baseball guy as well. I mean, wanted to get his thoughts on Pete Rose passing and not being in the Hall of Fame. And I think I understand why he got the ban back in the day from Commissioner Giamatti, because it was obvious they had plenty of proof that he was betting on games when he was managing. But there's no doubt in my mind he is a Hall of Famer. He wasn't a Hall of Fame human being, but he's a Hall of Fame baseball player. He was a great baseball player. He deserves to be in there. He is the all-time leader in hits. How do you not have that name there in the Hall of Fame? I mean, it's crazy. And you could be very honest with it on the plaque. It could say, you know, all-time hit leader, rookie of the year, all his accolades from his world championships and so forth. And then, but was banned from baseball when it was discovered that he gambled as a manager of the Cincinnati
Reds. And I think you can still ban players from baseball for gambling with Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. Like, you can still say, hey, absolutely, if you get caught gambling today, you're banned from baseball moving forward. It doesn't mean you can't appear on the Hall of Fame ballot.
I'm not going to forget that you ever, you know, existed.
So you vote Pete in as a player.
Yes.
Not for what he did as a coach.
Right. That should be because completely different. You know, Frank Robinson's not in the Hall of Fame as for his managing. That didn't take away from his playing days.
I'd probably put in Mark McGwire as a player, not necessarily because of what he did as a hitting coach either. You know what I mean? I think Mark McGwire, but his playing career merits inclusion.
Yes. Well, I would tell you, Dusty Baker had a great career. He's not getting in because in the Hall of Fame because of his playing. He's going to get in as a
he was a really manager. Good player. He wasn't a Hall
really
of Fame player, but as a manager, he's a Hall of Famer, and as a player and manager, it's not going to take away from his managing either.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, if you want to go down the list, Ed, and you don't put a guy in because he wasn't a good person, you can start with Ty Cobb and take him out.
Yep.
He was a great baseball player.
I don't know that the Babe was a sweetheart, you know. So
yeah, the John Goodman movie doesn't paint a very favorable portrait of the.
God, it doesn't paint a very good portrait of baseball either, though.
Exactly. So all that being said, hey, I hope we get it right. It's a really tough game to play the week after. You really let one that you
when your heart just gets ripped out
multiple times. Yes.
And it's homecoming for Georgia, and you know, last week's loss didn't really hurt them, but they know they can't afford a loss to a team that is as big an underdog as Auburn. So I don't think Georgia is going to be looking ahead after their loss last week either.
Well, and one last word for Jeremy. Jeremy, if you need a young lady over the age of 60 to talk to you about football, basketball, softball, and track, she lives with me.
we'll get him in touch.
Pickleball as well, too.
Oh yeah, pickleball, but not gymnastics.
Oh, okay.
All right,
Tex.
Talk to you later.
All right, good hearing from you. 29 minutes away from 6 o'clock, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break.
It's Tuesday.
Oh, it's Tuesday, and we'll talk with Jake Crane on the other side. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. A quick update on playoff baseball. A couple of finals now from the American League. We told you that the Tigers beat the Astros 3-1. The Royals blanked the Orioles 1-0. So both those series are, you know, 1-0 for the road teams, and the road team leading in the first National League wild card matchup as the series, the Mets leading the Brewers 3-2, top four, the Braves and Padres later on tonight. Right now, let's get to the Drive Hotline. welcome in our good friend from Crane and Company, Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, guys. Hope y'all and everybody out there is doing well.
Love this time of year, postseason baseball, playoff baseball, and serious college football time with conference play really ramping up. Not such a great time for Auburn, as the month of October means no home games, all road games against ranked teams, and especially coming off that painful loss last week to Oklahoma.
It's incredible how many of the things that we talked about last week, Jake, ended up playing out in the fourth quarter of that game. Auburn had the lead on the last lap. You know, they hit the wall.
Blew a tire.
Well, look, whatever. I mean, at this point, because it's not just, one group that chokes in the biggest moment. It's a team thing. And I think there's a sickness in the Auburn football program that there's having a little bit of fear of failure, I think is a good thing. But being afraid of the moment is another thing. And whether it's special teams that we saw, we can't hit a 27-yard field goal, can't hit a 22-yard field goal. I don't care if you're a freshman. Alabama's got a 17-year-old out there at wide receiver making plays in the Georgia game. So spare me the crying, for the Auburn guys that aren't doing what they're supposed to do. But to me, this seems like a team thing. And at this point, it's happened so many times from so many different guys. I think the only cure is you got to get the older guy leadership out of here. And it's not everybody. Like, I don't think Eugene Asante is afraid of the moment, but I think Auburn's older class has more guys that choke in big moments and don't want the moment. And the younger guys have got to take over. When it comes to Peyton Thorne, he did so many good things on Saturday, but you still found a way to blow the game. It's that NASCAR reference you made last week, Dan. It's exactly that. And people will defend it. They'll try and defend it as much as possible. But you can't do that. And the funny thing is, I mean, I guess it's not funny, is he really did that earlier in the game in the red zone, but it didn't get picked. It got knocked down. The exact same thing out of an empty look. You made the same mistake twice. And then you go on the next round live today and say that if you had to do it over 10 times again, you'd do the same thing. Well, if you know anything about football, you understand that you have a play call that goes in. You read the defense pre-snap, but you can't make your mind up where you're going to throw the ball before the ball is snapped. That's why defenses disguise coverages. They disguise the zero look, and they didn't run it. And you had the bubble wide open. Now, Auburn should have ran the ball on all three of those downs. We can all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you have an older quarterback that doesn't have the awareness on an RPO call to understand it's really a zone read call, because you don't need to pull it and throw it regardless unless they just don't cover the guy, is so baffling to me. I can't get over it. But here's the problem. And Auburn needs to be patient, like they do. But this isn't just a personnel problem. Auburn doesn't do the controllable things well. Mm. They don't manage the game well. They don't manage the clock well. They do things that are controllable wrong. So I think the problem a lot of Auburn fans have is it's not just that we're deficient overall on the roster. Actually, the roster's better than it was last year.
No question.
But Auburn doesn't do the little things right and the things you can control right. And that's on the coaches. So at this point, there is no great answer. I just think you have to bite the bullet, and you're going to go probably 5-7 at best. And you better just hope that you recruit really well and you can keep some of these young guys around, because there's a systematic illness in the Auburn program. And I looked up, it's called pseudo-dysphagia. It's the fear of choking. Mm. That is just all through the Auburn football program, and it's an absolute embarrassment.
You know, Jake, a couple of things come to mind with what you're saying. And we've been talking about a lot of those things here the first couple of days here this week. One of them is, Hugh Freeze last night on Tiger Talk talking about how well he thought the helmet communication was working on Saturday. And my thought is, well, can't you just make it very plain when you're talking to your quarterback that don't throw the ball when you have an 11-point lead in the fourth quarter?
It's a base call, Bill. It's a day one vanilla ice cream RPO call. you tell that quarterback, if you throw this ball, I am taking you out. But you shouldn't even call the RPO in reality.
Right.
You should have just called zone read. Or how about this? How about you give the ball to Jarquez Hunter? How about at the goal line you give the ball to Jarquez Hunter? How about on the last drive where he is ripping their guts out, you give the ball to Jarquez? Auburn is stupid. We just got to call it how it is. We're stupid. And if that doesn't change, Hugh Freeze isn't going to be here very long. I said this for multiple weeks. You can't be under-personnelled and stupid. You have to pick one. Either you don't have the talent, but you're so well-coached and buttoned up you can close the gap, or you're so talented, being undisciplined doesn't really matter as much until you're playing a team that is as talented or more than you. Auburn is a stupid football team that has a below-average roster overall. And you can get upset about it. You can get mad at me about it. That's not going to help anything. It is a total collapse by everyone. And you're probably – it's got to be – if you're an Auburn fan that was born in 2005 or after, God, I feel for you. Oh, my gosh, I feel for you. Because you're probably too young to remember the good times. And all you've done is been the poor kid on Christmas. You walk outside and see all your neighbors with the cool stuff while you get stuck with a rawhide mullet.
Yeah, if you're a senior in high school this year,
these are fans,
fifth grade, the last time Auburn was really a contender.
A fan too young to remember 2013.
Yes.
Would be somebody who is
a senior in high school.
Yeah, a fan. If you're too young to remember 13, then you're probably talking about
been 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Won the national championship.
Those poor souls.
Yeah.
Poor souls, because we're too stupid to take advantage of an Oklahoma team with a young quarterback on the road that's down 5 wide receivers. They dropped 2 picks earlier. But we're too stupid and undisciplined to take advantage of it. It's just at some point, and you have these Auburn fans that don't want to say anything bad. That's like raising a child and never punishing them. It'll never get better, and they'll just keep making mistakes. That doesn't mean that it's always going to be bad or that you always be critical or don't take positives from it. But the bottom line is this. Auburn is a stupid football team that is under-personnelled. And that is why that's afraid of the moment. That is what we are, and it's sad.
The late game decision making against Oklahoma, because Auburn didn't have leads late against Cal or Arkansas, I think makes it even tougher to stay positive in the
Late game decision making, but early game decision making on the first or second
possession, sure.
And then at the end of the first half, I had somebody tell me it's a shame we're not this isn't horseshoes, because Auburn comes close after we'd mentioned that. Saw the stat where over the last 5 years, Hugh Freeze has won 33% of his games decided by 7 points or less. And it's like, it ain't horseshoes.
Well, Bill, what blows my mind is that people will be like, and I know people are trying to look for the positives.
Sure.
And some people will never say anything negative, which I think is the worst thing that you can do. But people will be like, oh, look at all these yards that Auburn's getting. Oh, look at us in the red zone. This is a zero-sum game. Just like being a salesman is a zero-sum game. You either win or lose. You make the sale or you don't make the sale. What worries me now is Peyton Thorne is a captain. This isn't like it's some walk-on that just plays special teams that works hard, and everybody knows that. How could Peyton Thorne look at any of the young players and say anything to them about how they're playing or what they're doing when you do nothing but go out there, and even when you play well, you blow it? I had an Auburn fan say to me when I posted something about Peyton Thorne, he had his best game ever in his career at Auburn. How could you say that? My response was exactly, the best game of your career at Auburn, you threw a pick six in the most vital moment to blow the game and lost. That is the perfect description of the Peyton Thorne tenure at Auburn. And it falls back on Hugh Freeze because he decided to take the ship down with this guy and not get somebody out of the transfer portal. We're just a stupid football program right now. There's no other way to say it. Like, you got to call a spade a spade. And it'll get better, I think, because better players hide deficiencies. I've seen a lot of coaching staff that weren't great look like geniuses because they had great players. And I've seen the other end of it, too. So at some point, Auburn's got to coach better. You got to get better players in here. And for the love of everything in the 3-3-4, get Peyton Thorne out of this program as fast as possible. I don't care if it's tonight.
You mentioned in the fourth quarter how can a senior like Thorne be throwing those passes, Jake? And I guess I would wonder, based on Hugh Freeze's history, maybe Peyton Thorne was throwing those passes because Hugh Freeze wanted the ball in the air at that moment. When you're driving on Oklahoma up 11 in the fourth quarter after that Jarquez run, you know, it's on brand for Hugh Freeze to throw a pass and try to catch a defense slipping there. And then on the pass that ends with the interception, I can see how a Hugh Freeze offense would think, we need a first down so desperately, we'll risk a turnover in the moment. Not saying it's the right move, but I do wonder if this is sort of a, you know, it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Well, the throwing on third down, I can actually find a way where that one makes sense. Throwing and calling the RPO on first and second down, there is no way to make that make sense. But I don't care what brand it is. The only brand that matters is, what's the smart play at the time? Even if an RPO is called, my niece is 11 years old. She would even know that if I called an RPO in there, right, that it's basically saying run the ball because I know what the clock is and what the situation is. All right, so that's inexcusable by Peyton Thorne, and it's inexcusable by Hugh Freeze. But then to make the same mistake on third down that you made earlier in the game on the red zone, it was the exact same look out of empty. They walked the linebackers up, all right? We used to call it key. It was a bluff blitz and a drop back into the slant window because Auburn is very predictable out of empty. You made the same mistake twice, and then you went on to the media and said you would make the same mistake again. They tricked you. You got tricked because you made your mind up where you were throwing the ball before the ball was snapped. That's like walking in the batter's box and saying, I don't care what the pitch is, I am swinging at the first pitch. You may hit a home run every now and then, you may get a hit every now and then, but over the course of the long run, that will kill you. And that's what Auburn did. So if it is a feature, delete the app, because that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Talking with Jake Crane of Crane & Company here on the Tuesday Drive. Jake, meanwhile, across the state, what an unbelievable show that was between Alabama and Georgia last Saturday night. Man, you know, Georgia looked like they were toast, and then an unbelievable comeback. But as you said, Alabama's got this 17-year-old that is pretty special.
One or two drives in, though, you got the sense Georgia was going to make this a close game again. Even, you know, one or two drives after Alabama goes up 28-0. I did not know if Georgia would ever lead in the game, but I was not surprised that we were in for a competitive fourth quarter.
Yeah, well, they got 17-year-olds over there making Heisman-winning plays. We got 30-year-olds that don't know to run the ball, but that's a story for another day. That game was incredible. We live streamed it from Innisfree.
Wow.
What I'll say is this. I think the most shocking thing, and Dan, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit. I don't think, really, you thought Georgia was going to make the game until the second drive of the second half. I mean, Georgia got the ball coming out 30-7 and got absolutely bullied on that first drive and then totally flipped it because they started going up tempo and it took the thinking out of it. And obviously they converted 6 out of 6 fourth down drives. That's going to help get you back in the game any point in time. But what was so jarring about the beginning of that game was it wasn't like Georgia was just making fluky mistakes, like busting coverages or getting crazy penalties, or there was all these tip passes, and they were just getting bullied. Georgia was getting beat like they usually beat people, and Alabama looked so superior to them in doing the little things. In fact, the only time Bama didn't have anything working in the first half was when they ran the two trick plays. Everything else was working perfectly.
Right.
So seeing Georgia kind of turn that switch on in the second half, and to me, if I'm Georgia, I'm going to start going up tempo more, because the only time you've hit explosive plays this whole year is when you've gone up tempo. So it was a heck of a game. Look, Georgia, with that schedule, they've really got to thread the needle. But you got to give credit to Alabama. It's one type of mental toughness to get up and dominate. It's a totally different to when you give up that lead and blow it, answering right back and then getting a stop. So that was an incredible atmosphere. We were so lucky to be a part of it. And I tell you, man, it's going to be a heck of a next 4 to 5 weeks and the rest of the college football season.
Yeah, it's going to be quite the challenge for Auburn this October, starting with a trip to Athens, where they haven't won in nearly two decades.
No, look, it's going to be just prepare yourself.
Yeah,
like a lot of you already have. Prepare yourself. This is I don't see many wins left on this schedule, and again, even the moments where, unless there's some sort of, you know, somebody gets in there and hypnotizes everybody, I don't know. It's even Kentucky now, man. I mean, good Lord, it's going to be bad. But that's what happens when you make bad decisions. It's what happens, and you deserve bad outcomes. So I hate it for the Auburn fan base. They deserve so much better. You know, Auburn shows up more than anybody, basically. Regardless of the circumstance, there's no better fans than Auburn fans. It's just getting really sick and tiring of watching the teams not come through. And thank God for Bruce Pearl and basketball. That's what I'll say.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we're just about out of time. Let everybody know what you got going, Jake. What all's on tap this week on Crane & Company?
Well, we're breaking down everything. Did our Auburn Georgia preview. You know, if you want to listen to that earlier in the week. But check out Crane & Company, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's a good time.
All right, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Have a great week.
Appreciate see you, Jake. Guys.
Jake Crane joining us as he does on Tuesdays. And, he lets you know how he's feeling. We will get to our final break here on the Tuesday Drive. Stick with us.
Ride and seek.